Hello, dear heart. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in. I hope you enjoy this podcast episode with Oliver Brooke. This conversation for me is super nourishing because internal family systems, or IFS, has become an interest of mine over the last little while since I did the two-day experiential workshop with Oliver. And I have some questions in here that maybe dive into that, but re-listening back, I'm like, oh, this is, feels nourishing. Hope you enjoy. Deep, deep gratitude. See you on the interwebs.
Yeah. So just take a breath into the space. Feeling whatever resonance and wisdom wants to come through today to share with whoever will listen, wherever this will travel. And we welcome all of our parts. So hi, Ollie, and hello, everyone. This is my first recording for 2024, which seems really weird to say. And today we have Oliver Brooks, or Ollie, and he is a certified IFS therapist, an ACA registered counselor, and recognized supervisor. And he provides internal family systems therapy and supervision online. He's a beautiful space holder. I recently attended a two-day workshop in Perth. And so I asked Ollie to have this conversation to share more about IFS with our audience, but also I guess for me and some of my curiosities that I was carrying as well. And we met in our supervision training, which was a really beautiful connection. So thank you, Ollie.
Yeah, great to be here with you. Yeah. And thanks for that fire.
So I wanted to touch base and just see if there's anything your parts wanted to voice before we begin that you're sitting with.
Yeah, I did a bit of a check-in just before we kind of came on, and it was beautiful because at the moment in my journey, I have a real connection to my system, and I get this kind of beautiful visual imagery of them all kind of surrounding me and sitting with me. And I felt this sense that they're all here to support me in sharing this time with you. So, and I could feel kind of a connection to some ancestors, to my mom and to my grandfather, and also to kind of some guidance. So, yeah, I just want to name that they're all here with us coming into this moment. And that might not make too much sense to people who are listening yet, but hopefully it will by the end.
Yes, and welcome all your ancestors and all the parts of you as well. So I wanted to start with your journey and how you found IFS personally.
I come to internal family systems as a client. And the first time that I got introduced to it was with a therapist I was seeing in about 2016, 2017. And he wasn't trained in IFS, but he knew about the model. And we had been doing some parts work and noticing some different parts kind of in our sessions together. And he said, oh, I really want you to kind of check this guy out, Dr. Richard Schwartz, Dick Schwartz, and this model that he talks about in internal family systems, IFS. And so I went away and watched like a couple of online videos that Dick was talking about the model and explaining kind of the different aspects of it. And at the time, it really resonated with me. And I thought, wow, this is powerful stuff. And it seems to resonate with my experience and how I am made up. And for some reason, I then just forgot about it for like a couple of years. And then in 2019, 2020, it kind of came back on my radar. And at the time, I was working with Relationships Australia as a counsellor there, doing seeing couples, children, and adults. And I got a chance to do my own training, kind of for the first time. I got to choose what I wanted to do, and so that was the first thing I thought of trying out. And so I did an online training with Frank Anderson, who's an incredible kind of IFS teacher and trauma expert. And that was my first kind of official professional kind of intro to it. And at the same time that I was learning about the model in a professional way, I went and got my own IFS therapist and started exploring it kind of as a client. I've been a client in psychotherapy since I was a teenager. And the reason I kind of sought out help in that way is because in my last year of school, I had two big things happen in my life. I got glandular fever and then kind of went into a depressive episode where I missed nearly 3 months of school and was really unwell physically. And at the same time, my mum got a breast cancer diagnosis and she had to have a number of emergency surgeries and then start really intensive chemotherapy. And this was in my last year of high school. And so I had this really big impact from both my own physical health and my and what was going on with my mum. And she was my biggest support at that time. So I kind of lost all of my identity at school. I was a kind of a really successful rower and I was doing kind of the academic pathway at the school and things like that. And all of that kind of had to be left. And when I returned to school, I had a very sick mum. That was impacting my family in lots of different ways. And I was trying to kind of find my own feet and was really struggling. And for the first time in my life, had a lot of social anxiety and things like that. And so I sought out help for that. There was a school counselor. It was the first time that I'd even known about therapy and about counseling. A lovely man called Michael. And he was really supportive of me in that time, in that last kind of year of school. And it showed me that there was a way that people can be with each other that is healing, that is supportive, that is connecting. And so that was kind of my connection with therapy in the beginning. And over the years, I've tried lots of different therapists. And I must say that I've learned a lot more in the last kind of 5 years through being in the chair and being in my own process as a client than I have through the trainings, although the trainings have been fantastic. But the deepest work has been in the client seat. So that's how I kind of came to it.
Thank you so much for sharing and honouring your mum as well. Mm. Really felt that when you were talking.
Yeah.
How would you describe IFS to people who maybe haven't heard to it, or internal family systems?
I describe it in two ways. First, it's a model of mind. It's a theory of personality. And second, it's a psychotherapy. So the model of mind that IFS proposes is that we're all inherently naturally multiple, that we have a system of sub-personalities in our psyche. And so in IFS, we call them parts. And the reason that we use the word parts is it's the most kind of user-friendly word. And it's quite common for people to say, there's a part of me that wants to do this, there's a part of me that wants to do that. So it's kind of just natural in our speech. And these parts interact in a system. So you might have a part that has a desire to connect with someone, and then you might also have a part that feels anxious about connection with someone. And then you might have another part that then tries to avoid that or disconnects in some ways. And so these three parts kind of relate to each other in a system. So hence the word internal family system. And so the other concept that's really important in IFS is that separate to all our parts, there's an inherent self that is undamaged, unbreakable, and has certain qualities that come out when it's present. And Dick talks about these qualities being calmness, connection, clarity, confidence, courage. But it's kind of unique to each person. And the way that it shows up in me is sort of open-heartedness, vulnerability, feeling very kind of embodied in my body, feeling all of my body, and feeling open, clear, and connected to some sort of core of who I am. Whereas when I'm in a part that might be highly anxious or that might feel quite withdrawn, I'll feel closed-hearted. I'll feel more in my head. I might feel, some other feelings. And Dick found that, through the work that he did, that this self is in all of us and that it's often just underneath the surface of this internal system of parts. And that if we can get in relationship to that self, and if we can access that in sessions with clients and have them relate to their parts from that place, that healing can happen, and that they can begin to kind of witness what happened to those parts, what got them stuck in some of those patterns like the anxiety or the withdrawal, like I mentioned before. So, yeah, that's a little bit of insight into it.
I do wonder, though, been curious, I've been reflecting since the experiential workshop about, in terms of a system, sometimes it's discussed as though these parts of our system are quite concrete and they have names and they're always there. Yet my experience has been there's so many parts of me and
yeah.
I am re-encountering some, but for the most part, it's like more and more emerging. Mm. I wonder how you would describe it, the system of it all, maybe in your own experience or what you've witnessed in clients.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's different for every person. And so some people have no visualization of parts at all and only kind of perceive them as sensations or thoughts and don't have that concrete formation of them where they have an image and a name. And then on the other end of the spectrum, some people do, like myself. My parts have names, characters that show up. They're pretty consistent. I can relate to them in that way. So it's on a bit of a spectrum. It's not the same for each person. And some people seem to have only like a few, and a few being, you know, a dozen or so that show up consistently. And then other people have many more. So also the number of them that show up in sessions really varies as well. I'm in touch with, you know, many parts in my own system, and lots of clients that I see also have that experience. So there's no kind of way to say that it is a particular way. One of the beauties of the IFS psychotherapy is that we just start off just with deep listening and just really wanting to get to know the person and their system, and don't assume anything about how they're going to be organized and what parts are going to show up. And you're just really wanting to get to know that person. And so if I was getting to know your system, Gabrielle, and lots of different parts are coming up in sessions, that would just be okay. And that's what's there. And we're not trying to kind of make it fit into a particular box or anything like that.
And I really like, I've been thinking about it a lot outside of this practice as well, but the description of a garlic rather than an onion, often people say there's like layers of the garlic, but it's like, for me, there's definitely this, layers of the onion, but for me, it's definitely quite a complex thing.
So the reason we talk about that in IFS, like some people talk about in psychotherapy, you've got the onion and the different layers, and that you're slowly kind of revealing different things about your personality and your psyche. Whereas in IFS, we talk about the garlic because the parts sort of form in cloves. And so you might have like a little clove of parts that relate to each other. And in one session, you might be sitting with someone and they might be exploring anger and the parts that relate to anger. And there might be a self-critical part about getting angry, and there might be a part that feels shame about it, and there might be a part that tries to control the anger and stop it. And they might be one clove. And then the next session, the person will come in and they might not mention any of those aspects of who they are. And they might be talking about anxiety, or they might be talking about wanting to connect with someone. And so we think about it, in these clothes.
I'm probably jumping ahead, but I was also curious about how people tell the different textures of, say, what's a legacy burden or something inherited, and what would be something more from our own life.
Firstly, I think I just need to explain one concept in my IFS, which is we all have parts. It's natural to have them, but they can get stuck and they can get burdened by things that happen to us. And so, you know, we might be a child and we might have a really fun, creative part, like my young sons do. And then through either a single kind of incident thing that happens or ongoing burdening, that part might get stuck. And so one example of this is, you know, you might have a part that loves to draw and be creative, and then you go to school and a teacher or multiple teachers or other students start to criticize or, you know, put you down about your creativity and about your expression. And so that part takes in a burden that I'm not good enough, I shouldn't be creative, and they might get stuck with that burden. And so later in life as an adult, you might think of yourself as not a creative person. And you might not express in that way, and because you've got this burden that this part is still holding. The question you asked around legacy is that you can have burdens like that that you never personally experienced. So you might have a burden around creativity, but you didn't personally experience that as a child. It was from a parent. So a parent might have been highly criticized about their art or their creativity and never allowed to express as a child, maybe put down, insulted, potentially even abused about being expressive or creative. And that has cemented in their system they've never done the healing work around that in their lifetime. They've given birth to you, and then you might also carry that legacy around not being able to express. And there's some incredible research now in epigenetics that's kind of backing this up, that this is actually something that does happen, that we pass on these legacy burdens, is what we call them in IFS, but another name for them is intergenerational trauma. And so that would be one type of legacy burden. The other type of legacy burden that can happen is that culturally we can be burdened by something. So another legacy burden in our culture in Australia is the burden of racism, and that there is kind of a societal system that is imposing certain beliefs, certain conditioning on us as a person and on family groups around certain ideas and beliefs about race. And so that is also called a legacy burden, but is slightly different because it's coming from the wider culture rather than from an ancestor. And there's one more, and it's completely fallen out of my head.
And do they? I so agree with you on the cultural aspect and coming to terms with that. Yeah. I'm just wondering if they have a different texture of sensation, or they show up similarly to one that you haven't inherited from a parent or from culture.
Yeah, definitely. No, they have a different way of showing up in the person's system. And in my experience sitting with people, usually the ones that have been inherited from an ancestor, and it might be a parent or it might be further back, are usually held in one or two parts, whereas these wider legacy burdens can be throughout a person's system, and multiple parts can kind of be influenced by that. And so there might not be just one part that holds the burden of racism. There might be many parts that hold views that might be racist, or that might have beliefs that have been informed by the culture.
That's so interesting. I guess with my work, I'm always thinking about race and intergenerational healing, because it's a large factor of what we do. And so being like mixed race, so I've got different parental backgrounds, which means I'm probably battling sometimes.
To use you as an example, you might have beliefs from both sides, or I don't know your heritage, but different parts could hold them potentially.
Yeah, I definitely think I do. I navigate that all the time, especially with what I do, because it is a cultural practice. Mm-hmm. In your own experience, was that something prior to becoming connected with IFS? Was this the type of healing you were already engaging with, or did this give it more structure?
There's been some therapies that I have been a client of that have actually not been helpful, and that have kind of felt shaming and have felt like they have been trying to change who I am or say that how I am is wrong. And so it's been a process for me, both personally first and then as a therapist, of trying to find therapies that don't pathologize people, that aren't shaming, that don't inherently try to say that you're wrong or that you should be different than who you are. And so I was looking for that, both as a client and as a therapist. And IFS was and is the one that fit the best for me as a client and then as a therapist. And so I was already sort of resonating with finding approaches that were non-pathologizing, that were fully accepting of the person, that were kind of person-centered.
This is sort of quite contained in a way, in a beautiful container, but there's some aspects that are similar to like shamanic work or other healing modalities and things. Were you already open to that, or what's your thinking around that? More so in terms of like if you were already resonating with that style, or was it a big shift?
Same time, I was also curious about approaches that were using methods that use non-ordinary states of consciousness for healing. And so the IFS process is a very inner self-led process where you kind of, most people are closing their eyes, they're deeply kind of in their own inner journey, they're connecting with their parts, they might also connect with other kind of aspects of their personality and the psyche. And so there was already an interest in that, but it wasn't until after I started exploring IFS that I realized that a lot of those aspects of it have been borrowed or incorporated from shamanic practices, from other psychotherapies like Hakomi, which is very body-based, very somatic, from somatic experiencing, and that IFS is actually a bit of an amalgamation of a lot of those approaches. And I love that about it now. And now I'm exploring those individually as well and seeing kind of how it's been influenced by shamanism or how it's been influenced by Hakomi, because each of them has their own beautiful exploration and way of healing as well that I think luckily is incorporated in IFS.
I really resonate with that, what you said in terms of it non-pathologizing. It's a non-pathologizing approach. Yet as space holders, how do we sit with all the pieces that arise for us in holding space and having all these different aspects of us? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think, again, that's one of the things that draws me to IFS is the approach really acknowledges the therapist and that the therapist brings all of their own parts to every therapy session. And that if you're not aware of that as a therapist, then often your sessions are being driven by your parts and by your system. And a lot of people that are drawn to therapy are drawn to it because they have parts that want to help or fix or rescue or support or love or whatever it might be. And so IFS gives you an avenue for working with those parts. One, just being aware of them, that they exist and that they might show up in our sessions. And then further to that, actually giving us a moment where we can take them to our own supervisor or our own IFS therapist and then understand what might be driving the need to rescue our client or the need to fix them, and finding our own burdens in ourselves where we might have been hurt in a particular way that made us try to seek affirmation or worthiness from rescuing someone or helping someone. And so a lot of my process over the last 5 years has been taking the parts that get activated in my client sessions to my IFS supervisor and understanding and working with them so that I can show up in a more kind of self-led way in my sessions and not be kind of driven by my own unconscious kind of parts and really show up for people in that more calm, connected way. What do you think about that?
I really agree. I think it's essential as space holders to do that. I'm quite good typically of stepping into my therapist part. It is very much, I guess, a part where I can, okay, here I'm present and I don't seem to have as many parts arising there, but it will be maybe afterwards or things like that when I'm questioning. Yeah. So yeah, that was all the sort of the thoughts that were going through as you were talking.
Yeah, I really hear that. It's such a normal process, as therapists, to have that happen, after sessions, parts coming up, doubting parts, questioning parts, whatever it might be.
Have you felt the physical, when you're experiencing shifts in your system, is it a physical shift for you or is it a emotional? Like, how is it showing up?
Yeah, it really depends on the part and what's shifting. In IFS, there's a healing process, which they call the healing steps, and there's a part of that called unburdening. And one of the steps is kind of unloading these unhelpful or painful emotions and beliefs that we took in, those burdens that I talked about before. And so sometimes when you release them, it can be a really somatic, visceral sensation of weight lifting or purging of some sort of pain, or it can be, like a real somatic sensation of shaking or something like that. And at other times, it's just a lightness, or it's a bit more subtle, or it's just an acceptance of, oh, I don't believe that I'm like that anymore. It's just like a little shift of, oh, I see myself in a different way. So, again, there's a real spectrum of those shifts, depending on what the burden was. And sometimes they happen just in being in relationship with yourself and with the therapist, just being really deeply listened to about something that was shameful or something that was painful. I can feel a shift in myself just being really heard deeply about that without even doing some sort of unloading or unburdening process. So I think the shifts and the healing can happen just by someone being in that really deeply connected way you just described, when you're kind of being the therapist, where you're kind of present and attuned and available to someone. So,
and what's coming up for you that you'd want to share with people about IFS?
I think the thing I love about the model is that it's really simple, that the language is really simple. You know, we talk about parts and we talk about self and we talk about unloading things. You know, the language is really kind of practical and makes sense to a lot of people. And so I just want to share that it's something that a lot of people find useful. So I encourage if you're interested to explore that. And the other thing I want to share is that you don't have to take my word for any of this. But the thing I love most about IFS is you can just test it really quickly on yourself. You can do an IFS meditation. You can, you know, listen to Dick talk about the model, and you can just pause for a moment and check in yourself. Does this fit for me? You know, is this how I'm made up? And most people I talk to, when they explore a little bit, realize that it's very accurate to how our personalities are formed and the way that our parts show up. And so I love that about it. You know, there's so many psychotherapies out there at the moment, and I'm just applying for a training right now and hearing, you know, the trainers talk about the models, and it's just so complex. You know, there's all this terminology and there's all these phrases and names of people, and I'm just going, I can't relate to this. I don't understand it. Whereas I think the beauty of IFS is, for a lot of people, it's easy to understand, and it makes sense, and it feels accurate to our experience as humans. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. Did it feel like that when you heard about it or took it in, or did it feel differently? Because it could be just my experience.
It's hard to know. So when we were at the training, what I was hearing from a lot of people, that they were like, wow, I've been looking for something like this that really joins that spirit, you know, not spiritual necessarily, but energetic and spiritual and holistic with the I guess more clinical aspect of some many therapies. Yeah. Whereas I came from the other end. So I came from more of the spiritual aspect and have been adding clinical on to balance balance my practice, because as beautiful as all the spiritual nourishment is, there's also some bits you can't answer with that, or that a part of me wanted to understand in different ways. So I didn't resonate in that same way, but I felt somatically in my own system that, it just cleared a few of the pathways that other like spiritual practices don't. Like, for example, that what I really resonated was the piece of making sure that all the protectors are okay as you make a shift, something like that, which I notice in at least out the Romi that we do, we are shifting a lot of energy, but we're not always coming back really slowly to make sure all the layers of self is the not, I'm using it in my way, but all the layers of that person are contained. Sometimes it doesn't happen. So it was like those little key locks for me that really resonated.
Yeah, what you just said around, you know, making sure the person's different layers of who they are, are okay or are processing what's happened. Yeah, I think that element of IFS of always seeking permission from all of the different protective parts is just so beautiful and important, that you don't go anywhere inside the person's system unless all the parts have agreed to it and are okay with it. And if any concerns pop up or any fears pop up, you address them. And you be with that person's system in the way that it needs, without kind of trying to push through. And in my experience, having other therapies that haven't done that, you can get such backlash. You know, you can feel really ashamed after having a therapy session if your therapist has just asked heaps of questions and not
sort or disassociated permission. Or
disassociated. It's like, totally.
So I was wondering, because from some of the experiences I've had with playing with it with people, is that sometimes people don't want to honor those protector parts, and they're like, no, I just want to get to what it is, you know. So even though there are these parts that, they're not necessarily saying, oh yeah, I'll step back, you know. But it's more there's another piece that's if that is happening again and again and again with someone, is there an aspect of as the space holder that you address that again and again and again, or do you more just let that person go?
Yes. So I would just get really curious about who's saying that, because that sounds like a part that wants to resolve something, right? They might have an inner healer or someone who gets stuff done. And so I'd just be, that is a protector. And even though it's saying we've got to get to the pain or we've got to get to whatever's there, I would slow that right down and get very curious about that part of the person and just say, you know, what would it be like if we just stayed with you for a moment and got to know you? What do you fear would happen if we didn't go there straight away? Like, really get to know that aspect of the person that wants to, you know, charge straight in and resolve whatever's there. And maybe even ask, you know, what's it like for other parts when this one wants to go straight there? And there might be, you know, other parts that might go, oh, it feels too rushed, or we're scared that we're going to get overwhelmed, or whatever it might be. So there's richness in slowing it down and connecting with parts like that.
Yeah, and I noticed that, I guess because a lot of my clients are coming from a similar background of having done a lot of somatic work prior. So I noticed a difference between those who have done a lot of somatic work and those who haven't. Mm. In terms of those who have, will often just go straight in. They're like, yeah, right. there's like a excited, like a yes. Whereas those who didn't, there was a more of an unsureness or uncertain. How do you feel with those different presentations when you're?
Yeah. I've noticed the same thing. There's clients who have done a lot of kind of inside or inner work, whether it's somatic work, meditation, yoga, whatever it might be, and I've noticed that they're able to drop in and kind of go into their internal world. In IFS, we call it insight, inner sight. And then there are people who are much more hesitant, keep their eyes open the whole time, want to stay kind of intellectual, verbal, and you just meet them wherever they're at. Yeah. So just stay with wherever the person's system is. And often I find with those parts of the person that do want to kind of stay above the head and want to stay verbal and want to keep their eyes open and stay connected to me, that they need to really feel like they're trusted and that they're heard and that they're met, and that often if you do that well and you deeply listen, then the person will be able to drop in. And so it's not like a lack of skill. They still have the ability, everyone has the ability to do it, but they just might need something first to feel reassured or feel like they can trust you or whatever it might be. Yeah, but I have noticed that, what you've described.
Mm. Yeah, so one of my clients actually asked that. She was like, is it easier if you've done like our work before? And I was like, yeah, I think so. So expanded states, holotropic states, what would you like to say on that?
Oh, yeah. the insight process where you guide a person to go inside and connect with their inner world. So as simple as saying, you know, if they're talking about being anxious, where do you notice that anxiety in your body? And as the person slowly, you know, notices it in their stomach, maybe they start to close their eyes, then they start to kind of sense how that is emotionally for them. That inner process is called interoception. It's a process of inner sensing, of sensing our inner experience. If you stay in that process for even a few minutes, you alter your state of consciousness. You go into a non-ordinary state of consciousness. You're not kind of out here in the external world communicating like we are right now. You're doing this deeper inner exploration. And there are a number of different therapies now that use these non-ordinary states of consciousness to elicit some sort of healing or transformation for people. Meditation has been doing it for, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And so has kind of the psychedelic and the sacred kind of plant ceremonies and shamans and things like that. They use something to elicit a non-ordinary state of consciousness or a healing state of consciousness. so they can do this inner transformation or releasing of trauma. Through IFS and now through a couple of other modalities, psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy and other things that I'm becoming interested in, I've noticed that a common theme between them all is that they use some sort of method or induction to create a non-ordinary state of consciousness in the person. An incredible man you might have heard of or might not is Stan Grof, and he was one of the pioneers of LSD research. And then when LSD became an illegal substance, he developed a method of inducing a similar state of consciousness that LSD produces without substances, using music, breath work, a very particular set and setting. And that is called holotropic breath work. And he came up with the term a holotropic state of consciousness, holotropic meaning to become whole or to turn towards wholeness. Steve believed that non-ordinary states of consciousness was too broad, because getting drunk is a non-ordinary state of consciousness. So he wanted something more specific that was talking about the healing. So the reason I kind of made note of that is that I think IFS induces a holotropic state of consciousness where we're moving towards wholeness. We're moving towards accepting all the parts of ourselves. We're moving towards releasing the things that aren't ours, that are our burdens. So it's moving towards more wholeness, more acceptance.
I actually really love the term healing state of consciousness out of all of that. I was like, yeah. Oh, I love that. It's a, and how is your view with us merging or weaving with, I guess, being in, well, I am in what I have been, or I'm sort of trying to work it out, like real life or what life should be and our responsibilities and then our healing state or way.
Look, we have to, well, no, we don't have to. We choose to do both, right? And I guess the beautiful thing about IFS is all parts are welcome. So we have to have highly functioning, responsible, managerial parts to function in this world that we live in, which is very administrative, and we have to plan a lot, and we have to relate to lots of different external systems to survive, to work, to do things. So we need all of our highly functioning parts to do that. And then at the same time, we can choose to also spend time inside doing our own healing work and processing what's inside of us. And so I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both and I choose to just kind of create moments where I can drop in and do the deeper exploration, either in a group or in my own therapy or sometimes with my partner or sometimes with a friend. But I think to do that, you need a lot of safety and you need the right setting. And as you talked about holding space, you need people that can really hold space to be able to do that, because when you're in those vulnerable places and going to those things, you can really get hurt easily. So you don't just do that in your normal, ordinary life, or I don't, because it's too vulnerable and there's too much going on. So I kind of do have them a bit separate, but at the same time, the gifts and the things that you uncover and that you explore in those holotropic states do flow in and are part of the normal state of consciousness as well. And I just might be a bit more open or a bit more available when I'm rushing around trying to get my kids ready for school or whatever it is.
I don't know if I'm so good at compartmentalizing them. I sort of dove really deep for a few years there, and then now I feel like I'm more going, okay, like managerial paths, let's come back to the surface.
I'm sure other people do it differently than me.
I'm very curious about that. Like, how do we function in this world when we've done these things?
I do find it amazing, people who are, you know, highly achieving academics or clinicians, and at the same time are doing like really deep, powerful, you know, many decades long internal work. And it is incredible that people can do both and can integrate it. I'm definitely kind of just finding that way myself.
I sort of feel like in my life in general, I'm at a point where this state of where I am is quite different than where I've been before. And I used to always go, okay, well, we'll ask whoever's been here. And I'm looking around going, oh, I don't know how other people are thinking or living, like that, the particular things you need. So it's like, okay, I'm just curious at the moment about those things. And is transpersonal aspects of the psyche, what's that?
So what I love about IFS as well is that it has a really broad map of the psyche. You know, some therapies are only focused on the cognitive, or they're only focused on the emotional, or, you know, or maybe a couple of aspects. Whereas I think IFS has a really broad map of the psyche. It looks at the emotional, the cognitive, the somatic, and the biological. But then it also looks at the things that aren't about us personally, that are transpersonal. It looks at ancestry, spiritual aspects of the psyche. It looks at the collective unconscious. It sort of has a much broader map of the psyche. Yeah, and I'm very interested in those aspects. And they do come up in the work with clients, whether we're aware of them or not. You've already mentioned one, which is legacy burdens. And so that's probably the most common thing therapists will come across that's transpersonal, that's in people's systems. But there are other things that show up in sessions. Something in IFS we call unattached burdens. Another thing that people talk about in spirituality and also in IFS is guidance or guides, some sort of benevolent energy or presence that shows up in people's system. Also, you can kind of get archetypal imagery that shows up in your sessions or in your system when you're inside. And another thing that can show up is some sort of animal presence or plant presence or consciousness that might be connected to the person. So these are all kind of transpersonal aspects of the psyche that IFS, I think, has a broad enough lens and an accepting enough approach that it doesn't pathologize any of those and it doesn't try to get rid of any of them. And has the container to hold them.
And have you come across the guides or the unattached burdens in your own process? And how do you relate to them in your thinking?
Yeah, sure. The short answer is yes. They're not very common, though. They're rare. They don't show up regularly in sessions at all. And it's only through doing lots of deep inner work that a few of them have started to be revealed to me or shown to me. Lost my train of thought.
Yeah, what's your relationship to them? Because I can imagine for some people it would be like, oh, my God, what? And then for others it would be like, how exciting, you know, whatever. What's your relationship?
Oh, yeah, I think it's very exciting. I'm fascinated by it all. You know, I'm in a consulting group with an incredible IFS therapist in the States, Bob Falconer. And he's been exploring these kind of phenomena for the last kind of decade or more. And so I'm really very interested in that aspect of our psyche and get very excited about exploring it and talking about it and witnessing sessions where people guiding someone through connecting with something like that, a guide or an unattached burden or some sort of past life experience or legacy burden.
Well, that's sort of the practice that I do is mostly lineage-based. So we're said to be clearing different blocks or also collecting beauty and blessings throughout our lineage. So I found, and that's like our cultural background in terms of being Māori, Indigenous, or New Zealand. And it's interesting in that way that we often, because we've been, I guess, programmed from a young age or in a cultural environment from a young age where we're connecting to those that they're actually quite available to us. I just find that fascinating in terms of how people think about them and that they have been showing up a lot for people as well, mixed in with this life. Burdens that they're one and the same in some of the sessions I've been doing.
That's so beautiful to know that about you, Gabrielle. And I've been kind of coming from the opposite end, like they weren't present or acknowledged at all in my family system and in the school that I went to and the culture that I grew up in. And it's only been through lots of therapy and eventually IFS and psychedelics and a few other things that I've started to get access to them and started to learn about them and get curious. So I've kind of come from being completely closed off and not shown any of it to now kind of opening up towards it. And it sounds like you were in a culture where it was open towards it and they were present and acknowledged. And yeah,
that's part of why I'm doing this podcast as well, is to sort of try and formulate where it's all landing now, because it came from a certain cultural lens, and then it's like, okay, well, there's this whole other, you know, there's this whole other way that people are seeing it and try to understand that. We are nearing the end, but you mentioned that you would mention more about the training.
The IFS has a very specific way of training people. There's an IFS Institute in the States. It was run by Dick Schwartz, and now it's run by kind of a group of traders and other kind of lead trainers, but Dick's still involved in it. But there's three levels to IFS. There's level one, which is like an 88-hour, very immersive, two-week training. And there's a hybrid online format that's much longer. But the reason I wanted to mention it is in the level one training, you kind of learn the fundamentals of the IFS process, and you learn kind of the model of mind and the theory behind it. And there's a lot of practice. Like, you have to practice doing the therapy in practice groups. You have to be the client. You have to be an observer. And that's all throughout the level one training. And that's in the level two and three as well. So it's very, very experiential. And you've got to get to know your own system to be able to do the work. And then in the later levels, I've done a level two and heard a lot about level three. You get exposed to these other elements of the model, and you learn a bit more about legacy burdens, and you start to learn more about these other realms in the psyche. Whereas in the level one, it's much more around cognition and emotion and the parts, and a lot less of the spiritual and legacy kind of components are in it. So, yeah, I think that's what I meant when I wanted to mention it earlier, is that people might not know what I was talking about when I mentioned my ancestors or I mentioned my parts.
And did you want to say anything about your offerings or training at all?
I currently run a introduction to IFS in Perth, and it's a two-day workshop where you learn the model of mind and you get introduced to the first kind of steps of the model, so that you can guide someone into being with their protective parts and starting to get to know them and connecting them. Which is the one you've done. I also offer IFS therapy online for people to experience the therapy for themselves in an ongoing way, in a really deeply relational way. And then I also offer supervision for therapists who are beginning to learn the model and beginning to integrate it. And I do that individually, and I run groups as well. And then later in this year, I'm going to be running the first advanced IFS workshop in WA, where people can learn the healing steps of the model, can learn a bit more about the other aspects that we've been talking about in this session today with you in more depth. And that's going to be done over 3 days. There's going to be demos. It's going to be very experiential. There'll be meditations and different things, so you can get to know your own system better as well. And we're also going to be exploring in that one around kind of polarized systems and polarized parts and how to work with them. So, yeah, there's a fair bit going on.
Thank you. And is there anything sitting with you that you would like to share with everyone in this moment?
Let me just pause and check in. What I want to convey, there's one last thing I want to convey, and this is something that I have a felt experience of now, of being an IFS client for many years, that none of us are broken, and that you're exactly how you should be in this moment, because of everything that's happened to you and where you've come from and your ancestry. And that when you start to get to know your system, even though you might feel really stuck or really despairing in this moment about something you're doing or the way that you are in some way, when you really deeply listen to yourself, it all makes perfect sense. And I just want to convey that.
Thank you so much, Ollie. I really appreciate your time today, your wisdom, and being you in every space, in the different yous, and every space I've connected with you. I so deeply appreciate it.
Thank you, Gabrielle. Yeah, it's lovely to be with you. I really resonate with how you show up, and it always feels good to be connected to you.